But if a state wants recognition, it seems reasonable to ask,
where are your borders? Where are your borders? Where are your borders? Where are your borders?
I heard him speaking to the Congress, getting his 29th standing O. He said, we need our security from those terrorists, don't you know? Well, if you want security, I wonder if you'd say it's true that the Palestinians should have security too.
We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m., at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Old rockin' chair's got me.
Old rockin' chair got your father.
Monday, August 18th at 6:30 p.m., join KBOO at the Clinton for a screening of Woodstock, the director's cut. This landmark concert film is the definitive record of that three-day cultural event. Director Michael Wadley worked with over 300 hours of footage to create his original 225-minute director's cut. Again, that's Woodstock, the director's cut at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Friday, August 8th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. I'm going to try to speak with Richard Silverstein today about the Hannibal Directive. So many of these dark corners of foreign policy have emerged in the course of the massacre in Gaza. And we were treated just yesterday evening to the sound of President Obama primly declaring that we would not stand by and allow genocide to occur against the Yazidis. Wait just a minute! Hang on there. What makes that genocide, and what has happened to the Palestinian people? What's that then? That's far beyond genocide, I would have to argue. And on that note, we are going to move right along. We do have Haley Boyd is going to join us, an organizer here in Cascadia. And later on, we are going to try to reach Richard Silverstein. We have news on environmental issues and all that. But right now, let's speak with Haley Boyd, an organizer. Many times, people's first introduction to an issue is through canvassing. People, the canvassers are out there. You see them all the time out there in the wind, the rain, the cold, the blasting sun, with clipboards, and approaching people who can be rather nasty at times. It's also astonishing what people don't know. If there was ever any group of workers who needed the support of a union, it certainly would be canvassers. Good morning, Haley. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, and thank you for that introduction.
Well, yeah, you are on the front lines of many issues that are incredibly important, that people are you would be the first their first introduction to some of the measures that they might find themselves confronted with on a ballot. And sometimes, because people really don't read anything except the trash news and so forth, that's it. After they sign the thing, they talk to you people a bit, they go back to sleep. And then if they vote, then... Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing, one of the actions you took, and how we can stand in solidarity with you.
So we've had a couple of big rallies, and we're going to continue to have more public actions. People can check out more information on the United Campaign Workers Facebook. And we really just want, at this point, our bosses to negotiate with us, because they said they were going to negotiate and then they canceled. And
what are some of the working conditions that kind of brought this to a boil? I know that some people who canvass say that they get called at the very last minute, so it makes a complete hash of one's life, because you're more or less waiting to see when you're going to be called in and then treated. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no such thing as the concept of overtime somehow has not washed up on the shores of canvassing yet, has it?
No, yeah, there might be some issues there. We're looking into that. But basically, it's what brought it about is just the way that we are treated in the office. The turnover is super high. And our boss makes jokes about how many people she fires. She thinks it's really funny or something to brag about. It's a really unprofessional environment. If you try to ask questions about paychecks, and when something doesn't seem to add up about pay policy, our boss is really evasive and defensive. You cannot get a straight answer. Most people don't canvass for more than a few days before they are fired, which makes sense because they don't tell people how to do their job. And like you were saying, we're the face of, in this case, we canvass for Planned Parenthood Action Fund and the Nature Conservancy, and we are the face of those organizations. So the fact that people are going out there and don't know what they're doing and what they're saying to people is a problem. And I don't think that street canvassing as grassroots campaigns is running it now is going to pay off for these organizations in the long run like they think it will. They're hurting their workers. They're hurting these progressive organizations. And it's just not good for anyone all around.
So basically, this would be beneficial. This is a potentially a win-win situation for workers and management, because if there was a union, and if they were organized, these problems would be addressed head on, and everyone would be better off. The company would be more profitable because they would be doing a better job, it seems. Well, as before we let you go, just give us one more time a resource we listeners can go to find out more about the issue and to support your efforts.
Yes. Please visit the United Campaign Workers Facebook, and we continue to update that with public actions that we're going to take and ways that people can help out.
Haley
Boyd,
really
love our job.
I'm sorry.
We love canvassing for these organizations, and we want our jobs to be better, and we want it to be useful to these organizations that we are canvassing for.
Thanks so much for that. My guest has been Haley Boyd. And we're going to speak now in a short time that we have with Richard Silverstein, because he is the go-to chap when it comes to understanding what the Hannibal Directive is and how it has been used on the front lines to basically massacre the Palestinian people without any regard for international law or moral standards or any sort of decent human behavior. Good morning, Dr. Silverstein. Thanks so much for being with us. We're very excited to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Well, meet Hannibal. This is not the guy with the elephants going over the Alps. This is not the cannibal chap. This is the Hannibal Directive. What the Israelis came up with is what actually is the Hannibal Directive?
It's a regulation that was formulated by the Army in the 1990s to deal with situations where Israeli soldiers may be captured by the enemy. Originally, the enemy was Hezbollah in Lebanon, and now it's Hamas in Gaza. And it was first put into place in Operation Cast Lead in 2009. And what it does is, if an Israeli soldier is being captured or has already been captured, it allows the Army to do anything possible to either frustrate or stop the capture, or to actually, once it's happened, to actually kill the soldier and the enemy who has captured him. So, in effect, in 2009 in Cast Lead, an Israeli soldier was killed by Israeli forces. He was being held captive in a building. They shelled the building and they destroyed it and they killed everyone inside, including the soldier. In Operation Protective Edge, which is the current war that's going on in Gaza, they've actually killed two of their own soldiers. One was Sergeant Guy Levy and the other was Lieutenant Hadar Golden, who were captured in raids by Hamas and taken away through tunnels. And once that happened, Israeli forces pursued them and ended up killing them. And what is really horrific about the second incident of Lieutenant Golden is that he was taken away and through a tunnel and brought back into Rafah, which is an area of Gaza. And when the IDF discovered that, they decided that they were going to basically destroy Rafah. So every vehicle, every ambulance that was approaching the nearest hospital where the soldier might be taken because he was wounded, they were destroyed. Destroyed by airstrikes, destroyed by heavy artillery. And in the course of a few hours, 150 Palestinians were killed in that operation, which, as I said, was not only designed to kill the soldier who had been captured, but it was a collective punishment, collective murder on the neighborhood of Gaza where the soldier had been taken.
It seems extraordinary, and I suppose that this is indeed an extraordinary situation, what's happening in Gaza, and the fact, too, that the president would go on national television and tell the world that that Americans will prevent genocide wherever it occurs, and while turning an absolute blind eye. Some of these I don't know how to describe the Hannibal Directive, really, but they seem to be simply writing themselves a blank check, so that this is not something that is encountered in regular warfare. Granted, this is asymmetrical war, but this, it doesn't seem, this is an extermination. This is not regular war. So the rules, the laws of war, seem to be either be not applied. How does this fit in with our concept of what war is? Because this is not war.
Well, I should explain to you the reason why Israel is willing to go to this extent to even kill its own soldier. And the reason is that this has happened before, where Hamas or Hezbollah has captured Israeli soldiers. And what ends up happening is they're held hostage for ransom. And the ransom is usually the freeing in exchange of hundreds or even up to 1,000 in the case of Gilad Shalit, who was the last captive that was held by Hamas. 1,000 Palestinians were freed from Israeli jails in return for freeing Shalit. So the Israeli far right, which controls the political system in Israel, is extremely opposed to free any Palestinians, no matter what crime that they might have committed. And to prevent this kind of embarrassment or shame, the way that they view this, they're willing to kill their own soldiers. And I call the Hannibal Directive basically a shoot-to-kill order. It's being, you know, that name may be a little bit dramatic, but it's not really a terribly extreme explanation or definition of the term. And it's the insanity of it is that to prevent your soldier from being captured, even if he's alive, you're willing to kill him. And I think it shows sort of the total dysfunction and almost insanity that reigns inside Israel when it comes to security matters. And it shows, I think, the dysfunction of the policy towards Hamas of every 2 years having a war against Hamas, in which you repeat the same mantra of we'll destroy Hamas, we'll create silence and quiet forever, and we'll deal with this and eradicate them. And of course, it never happens, and Hamas returns, and Israel doesn't learn anything, and the same cycle repeats itself, which is almost the definition of insanity, I guess.
It is. It is indeed. Richard, thank you so much. We're very, very pleased to have you on the show today. I've been looking forward to speaking with you and sharing your voice with listeners all week. Any other resources that you'd like to offer listeners to find out more about it is very hard to understand what the Hannibal Directive is. What resources can you recommend?
Well, I would recommend that people check out my blog, which is at richardsilverstein.com, and the name of my blog is Tikkun Olam. And there are several other good resources of organizations that are dealing with these issues. There's Jewish Voice for Peace, which is based at the Bay Area, and some other really good issues. Israeli newspaper Haaretz covers this story pretty well, and those are some good places to start.
Thanks so much for that. My guest has been Richard Silverstein. This has been Air Cascadia for Friday, August 8th, 2014. Sam Parrish engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Sam. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Anderson.